This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, your hourly offering of old-time radio crime, brought to you every Wednesday by RelicRadio.com. We'll start off this week with The Adventures of Philip Marlowe and the Headless Peacock, his episode from July 16, 1949. After that, it's Pat Novak for Hire and John Brown Gambling Ring, his episode from August 3, 1947.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gut of the prison of the grave. This one began with a bedlam and got worse as I bumped into a burglar, a bookie, a Boswell, and a body, and a big shot named B. And before it was all over, everyone had lost his head because the headless peacock had moved.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of mystery, comes his most famous character and crime's most deadly enemy as we present The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Headless Peacock.
The day had been eight noisy hours of international complications, local vintage. It had started when a Frenchman from Beverly Hills who spoke no English hired me to find the Filipino houseboy he thought had stolen the family silverware to sell to a prosperous downtown Chinese. However, it had played differently since the Frenchman had been wrong all the way. And both the houseboy and the silverware had turned up in the cool of his own basement, where the servant had gone to do his polishing in comfort. Which was hardly the end of things, because even now, as I slumped behind the desk in my office exhausted, the accused Chinese, who was highly insulted, was on hand together with a nasty pet terrier tucked underneath his arm to tell me all about it. And just to top that off, the door was suddenly flung open and bedlam really set in, because the new arrival, who was maybe 28 with green eyes that sparkled in an almost pretty face, was also a redhead with demeanor to match. And it was obvious that one, she wanted to hire me, two, she was in a hurry, and more important,
Hey! Just a minute!
Hold it, both of you. Now, Mr. Tang, I've had enough. Here on your way out, take this. It's the Frenchman's address in Beverly Hills. The mistake was his. See him. Goodbye, sir. Thanks, honey. It was going to be me or that windbag with Terrier any minute. What can I do for you?
Plenty, and all of it in a hurry. Sit down and listen hard, will you, Marlowe? My name is Dennis. Front part, Artie.
Oh, which is short for what?
The whole thing. It's really Ruth Dennis. R.D., see?
Oh, that's cute. R.D., Artie. Yeah, what's the problem?
It's a guy I love, Marlowe. He's tall, blonde, and his name is Gordon Holzer, and he sells shoes. But don't laugh, because when he connects, he does it by the carload.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I figure he loves me and at the moment is in lots of trouble.
Why?
Because when I came in on the train late this afternoon, Gordon wasn't on hand with the usual brass band. He wasn't at my apartment either. But a note was. Said he had to work late at the office. I waited an hour and then gave him a ring. They told me he wasn't in, hadn't been, for 2 days. Next, I called his home. He has a bungalow up on Vista Del Mar. 7700 North.
Mm-hmm. And when you got no answer, you started to worry, huh?
Yeah, so I went up there. Gordon, of course, wasn't around, but somebody else was. Somebody small on the natty side, with no more eyebrows than a goldfish. He belonged to a new sedan, long and black.
Did you talk to him?
Oh, better than that. We wrestled. Have you got a cigarette?
Oh, yeah, here.
Thanks.
It's all right.
See, Marlowe, this guy was snooping around the place, so I decided to find out a few things. I made believe I had a gun in my pocket, and I told him to put his hands up.
Oh, fine.
Well, it worked for a while.
Which brings us to the wrestling, huh?
Yes. When I mentioned Gordon's name, he knocked me down. But he wasn't very big, so I managed to hit him once with my bag before he got away. Also, I ripped his coat pocket open. And here, this fell out. It's a newspaper clipping. A picture of a fat hunk of jewelry that was once stolen from someone named Isaac B.
Stolen from Isaac who?
B is in bzzz.
Oh.
Look, it's a peacock with the head broken off.
But with a tail that's loaded with diamonds, rubies, and emeralds. What does it mean?
What is it? Marlowe, that's the reason I'm here. I don't know.
Hmm.
You'll turn the clipping over, you'll see that the theft must have happened quite a while ago because the ad on the back features a Christmas special.
Tell me, you figure that Gordon stole this from Mr. B?
Well, no, I don't.
Well, then why'd you come to me instead of the police?
Well,
you what? Come on, Artie, let's have it all, huh?
Okay.
That's better.
I don't suppose it's smart not to tell you anyway. Gordon isn't all shoe salesman. He's part lunatic when it comes to the horses. You know, the right pony a day keeps the doctor's bills away. I thought I'd cured him. Now I'm less than sure.
So you figured that maybe he got in too deep while you didn't know about it, and now he's trying to even things up by playing with stolen property, is that it?
I hope not. But even if it is, I still want to help him. Now here, here's $100, Morrow. If you go to work for me, yes or no?
Yes, on one condition.
All right, what?
If I find out the facts and pass them on to you, until and if he turns up crooked, and I drop it, agreed?
Agreed.
The lady left, and in that hour that followed, I was on my own in the files of the Hollywood Times. I learned that Isaac B. was a 70-year-old eccentric with curly hair, a bulbous nose, no chin, $1 million, and a mansion on West Adams Boulevard. He had a Napoleonic complex and was a great philanthropist, as long as the grant in question would perpetuate the name of Isaac B. About the headless peacock, I learned little except that it had never been recovered and that the gems in the tail were of an unusual cut and would be hard to peddle. So it was 8:30 when I finally dropped the oversized bronze knocker monogrammed I.B., after which a man about 40 with a sallow complexion and a voice as delicate as spun glass opened the door halfway.
Yes, sir?
I'd like to see Mr. Isaac B., please. Name's Marlowe.
And your business?
Personal. I'm a private detective. And you?
Me? Why, I'm Everett Ransom. I'm Mr. B.'s biographer, but also, Mr. Marlowe, I act as his aide. Now, if it's about money for some cause, you'll have to follow the usual channels and write to
you
Mr. B.
You can stop right there, Boswell. I'm not after money, just information.
About what?
A piece of jewelry that was stolen from Mr. B., a headless peacock.
The peacock? You know of its whereabouts.
I didn't say that. Now, do I see Mr. B. or no?
You, young man. Open up, Ransom. Bless him.
Yes, sir.
We'll sit over here in the foyer.
How cozy. Thank you, Ransom. Mr. B., my name is Philip Marlowe.
Yes. I heard a private detective, the peacock and all that. Well, what do you have to say?
Not very much. I understand the peacock was stolen from you some months ago.
Why,
huh?
Yes. Yes, shortly before Christmas. It was one of Mr. B.'s favorites. Priceless as both a museum piece and for the $100,000 worth of
we
jewels.
We all
in the
know that, Ransom.
Yes, sir. Shall I go now, sir?
No. That busted me for the Young People's Club. I want you to take it with you before you leave tonight. I'll show you the inscription change I want made the first thing in the morning. You can keep it in your apartment until then.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Now, Marlowe, get to the point. Quickly, please.
All right. Mr. B., a client of mine...
Whose name is what?
Miss Ruth Dennis, if it matters, is worried about a boyfriend.
Which concerns the peacock in what way?
I don't know. Unless you can tell me something about a natty little man who's short on eyebrows.
Eh?
When last seen, he was carrying a newspaper picture of the bird. Mean anything?
No. Is that all you know about the theft, Miss Marlowe?
Just about. That and the name Gordon Holzer and a bungalow on Vista Del Mar near Franklin.
Holzer, bungalow. What are you talking about, Marlowe?
Shots in the dark, Mr. B.
Oh, shots.
When they miss a mile. Good night, sir. Outside in my car, as I started away from the curb, I glanced into the rearview mirror and saw the reflection of a sedan that was also just beginning to move. A sedan that was both very long and very black. I kept to the quiet streets and stayed under 30 until I'd gone about 2 miles, and then, at the next intersection, a busy one, I made my move, which was a sudden spurt into thick traffic via a wide left turn that produced screeching tires and frank opinions.
You stupid jerk!
I swung around the block once, made it back onto the quiet street just in time to catch sight of the sedan going by fast. I followed it, and 20 minutes later, when it braked to a stop in Beverly Hills in front of a hat shop marked Lester's, I did the same. I piled out of my car and walked quickly toward what I thought would be the natty man without eyebrows. But when the door of the sedan opened, it was a woman, blonde and beautiful, who ran to the door of the shop, unlocked it, and hurried inside to where a telephone was ringing. There was an alley beside the building, and I ran back to where I could see inside. There were 5 telephones side by side in a phony front cabinet that spelled Bookie. And on the wall above a publicity picture of a natty man without eyebrows, sitting in the middle of a bunch of zany hats. Beautiful blonde was talking on one of the telephones. And when I moved closer, I was happy to hear her address the party at the other end of the line as none other than Gordon Holzer.
Uh-huh. He's on his way up there now. Where are you? Oh, returning home. That's fine. Key still in the mailbox? Good. Of course, Mr. Holzer, you decided to pay that $15,000 for sure this time, haven't you? You know, Mr. Lester wouldn't want you to disappoint him.
I moved out of the alley quietly and went back. Entered the shop through the front door, which was still open.
Beautiful blonde was just hanging up the phone when I stepped into the light.
What?
Good evening.
Who are you? What do you want here?
A new hat. Something chick. Any suggestions?
Yes. Get out of here. This shop is closed for business.
Bedding included?
What's that? There must be some mistake. This is a hat shop.
With five hidden telephones and a boss man who collects pictures of headless peacocks for a hobby? Sorry, baby, I don't buy it. Not even as a conversation piece. So shall we start all over again, huh, baby?
Well, yes. Why don't we?
And with this to keep us from changing the subject.
A heavy service 45, honey. Looks a little bulky in that dainty hand, don't you think?
It'll look worse when it explodes in your face. Now, who are you?
By name, Philip Marlowe.
By occupation?
A private detective. And just to keep the interview rolling, I sleep in pajamas, tops and bottoms alike. Love Chinese
Stay
cooking,
back.
Pressed almond
don't
duck in particular.
Closer.
And don't prefer
blondes.
Give me that!
You big bum. I don't know why I didn't shoot.
I do. But lest we lose the question and answer period, your turn. Name.
Patience.
Oh, no. What's the rest of it?
Hancock. A very fine Virginia name, Mr. Marlowe. Anything else?
Yeah, there is. What's your connection with Mr. Lester, Gordon Holzer, and the Headless Peacock?
If it's any of your concern, I happen to be Mr. Lester's business associate. But believe me, when he gets back from Pasadena, he...
You mean just what you said. The man I'm looking for is in Pasadena.
Don't look.
Thank you, honey child. The interview's now closed because as of this minute, I'm off for the home of the Rose Bowl. Good night, patience. I was going to Pasadena like Patience Hancock was going to join the Campfire Girls. But as long as the little Virginian wanted it that way, I couldn't see any reason not to play ball. So after I called my client and brought her up to date, blow by blow, I headed for 7700 North Vista Del Mar in what I figured was a business transaction, Headless Peacock included. I parked away from the place, which was cedar shingles under healthy ivy, and a single lamp at work in the living room. Then I walked up to where I could see that a man, blonde, tall, and alone, in hat, coat, and frightened face, was about to leave. When the door opened, I took that as my cue to switch 38 from shoulder holster and announce myself.
Well, what do you want with me?
Words, Mr. Holzer, lots of them. You see, I work for a... Mr. Holzer, that man on the floor there behind you, that natty little man without eyebrows, seems quite still, isn't shot to death.
He is. But I didn't do it. Honest, I didn't. Now, let me out of here. I gotta go.
Start running? Come on, Holzer. I'm not old chump. Get back inside.
All right. But I can explain this.
Oh, sure. Sure. It's easy. Like, one, you lost too much money playing the horses through this dead bookie here who used to double as a milliner.
Boy.
And two, to square yourself with him, you got mixed up in $100,000 worth of headless peacock. Three, Mr. Holzer, as of just now, you had an appointment with said milliner, which body on the floor here says got out of hand. Now, do you care to add anything? Like how you got the peacock away from Isaac B. and what took you so long getting around to peddling it?
I don't know any Isaac B., nor did I...
Nor did you what?
Outside the window. Somebody's moving.
Yeah, somebody with a gun. Duck holes. It's going to be lights
out. He's going to shoot.
In just a moment, the second act of Philip Marlowe. But first... Sunday afternoon, a perfect time for music. Sunday afternoon, the time of the week when almost everyone takes time for relaxation. Combine Sunday afternoon with music and relaxation, and you have the Symphonette and the Corallaires, two outstanding CBS musical programs. Most of these same CBS network stations bring you both programs every Sunday. Relax and enjoy them tomorrow. And now with our star, Gerald Moore, we return to the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's story... The Headless Peacock.
It had come 1, 2, 3. A corpse on the floor, shots through the window, and Gordon Holzer out the back door while bullets made lights out. And Marlowe on the floor, the smart move. It made this the time to call the law, so in case the character with a gun was still hanging around outside... I left the lights off, fumbled my way to the phone, and dialed 116 in the dark. A minute later, I had Detective Lieutenant Matthews on the wire.
So you got a corpse, huh, Marlowe? Give it to me again, will you? Who, where, and why?
A guy named Lester, supposed to be a hat designer in Beverly Hills, was taxed up better as a bookie. He was shot to death here at 7700 Vista Del Mar.
Whose place is that?
One Gordon Holsey. He has his name on the mailbox.
Hey, got a motive, Marlowe?
Well, it's a theory. Could be that Lester put on too much pressure trying to collect 15 grand Holzer owed him from bad bets on the ponies. There's more, but it'll keep till you get here, Lieutenant.
Okay, Marlowe. A couple of the boys are on their way now.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be over myself later. Stick around, will you?
Yeah, okay. Goodbye.
Marlowe, you promised me you wouldn't call in the police, but I heard enough to know you just finished talking to them. Didn't you, you two-faced cheat?
You bet I did, cutie. What's more, when you hired
me... I'm not through. I want to know something else. What are you doing here in the dark, and where is Gordon?
All right. In that order, first the lights are out to keep me from being shot in the back. Second, your boyfriend Holzer left on the double because I was about to find out why Lester's body is here on Holzer's living room floor.
Lester's body?
You heard me.
You mean that little man is in here, dead?
Very much so. And don't burn yourself out on that shock surprise routine.
Marlowe, I swear I... Okay, turn on a light and show me. Where is this corpse, if any?
Baby, don't forget, the last time lights were on in here, the room felt like the receiving end of a shooting gallery.
I didn't see any firing line when I came in.
Yeah, that's a point. But there are two ways of looking at it.
Will you turn on a light, or will I?
Okay. We'll play it your way. Yeah, take a good look.
Oh, Marlowe, it's him, all right. Same little man.
Artie, you knew I was coming over here. You knew the setup, and I was close to winning an argument with Holzer when somebody broke it up by shooting through that window, straight enough not to hit anything, even though Holzer was a perfect target. Add it up for yourself, baby.
Oh, it wasn't me, Marlowe. Please believe me. You do, don't you?
Let's look in this bag of yours first, honey.
Give me that.
In a minute. Well, that's one thing in your favor. No gun. Could have dropped it in the shrubbery on your way to the door, of course. Here's what I really want, anyway.
My keys? What do you want them for?
I'll tell you later. Well, that's the boys in blue, and just in time.
Yeah, you louse. In time for what?
To hold on to you as a material witness.
But...
I've got work to do, and I want to get it done without you screaming at me all the way.
Oh, I wish I'd never hired you. I wish I'd never heard of you.
And another thing, if you're playing me for a patsy, kid, that's only the beginning. You'll need a deep well full of wishes before it's over, so come on, behave yourself. I told the two prowl car cops no more than I'd already told Lieutenant Matthews, except that Artie should be held because she was Holzer's girl. That plus the small lie that I'd cleared with the lieutenant to leave as soon as help showed, and I was out the door, into my own car, and pointed toward Artie's place, which was on Tamarind. I figured there was a good chance Holzer would head there first, and if I moved fast, I might catch up with him before the police did. Artie's place was dark, which could mean anything under the circumstances, so I dug in my pocket for the keys I'd taken from a purse and started for a door when footsteps behind me changed my mind.
Oh, Marlowe. Mr. Marlowe, say this is a stroke of good luck finding you here.
That depends. How'd you manage it, Mr. Ransom?
Why, Mr. B has had me trying to locate you since about an hour after your interview this evening. I checked everywhere and finally looked up your client's name in the phone book, got this address, and, well, here you are.
Yes, I know. Why have you been after me? What's all the excitement? And make it fast, I'm in a hurry.
Yes. You see, your call this evening intrigued Mr. B and me very much, and after you left, we naturally began discussing the theft of the peacock again.
Naturally? Look, Ransom, get to some point, will you? I got things to do.
Oh, certainly, Mr. Marlowe. Well, sir, the point is that in going over in our minds the days preceding the theft, we both recall a man named Holzer or Holter or something very close to that.
Mm-hmm.
He came to the house one day claiming to represent a certain philanthropy. He was a fake, of course, and we never saw him again, but it was less than a week later that we discovered the peacock was gone. Stolen.
What did this man look like, you remember?
Well, I most assuredly do. He was bald, about 50, and fat.
No, it couldn't possibly be the same man.
Oh, you found Mr. Holzer then?
Once, briefly, there's no resemblance.
Oh, I see. Well, I don't know how I'm going to break the news to Mr. B. He's upset all over again. I can't tell you how much that headless peacock means to him.
Try saying $100,000.
Mr. Marlowe, have you run across anything else tonight other than that newspaper clipping that would seem to be connected with the pin in any way? I can arrange a reward, you know.
No, nothing. I'm sorry. Well, good night, Mr. Ransom. If anything comes up about headless peacocks, I'll call you as soon as...
What is it? What did you find?
A note stuck in the door.
Oh, maybe I should take
it.
No,
I can handle it, really. Dearest Dottie, I didn't realize how fast things got out of hand. I must have lost my mind. I'm going to undo all the wrong I've done, and I'm getting out. Love, Gordon. Yes, I should have listened to a smart girl in the first place.
Why, Why, Mr. Marlowe, the fellow sounds desperate.
Yeah, he's got a right to. That natty little man I mentioned earlier tonight is dead. Murdered.
Oh, great Scott. But then, Mr. Marlowe, then how can this man possibly undo all the wrong he's done, as he says in that note?
That beats me. But one thing is sure. This hands my little client a nice clean slate, which makes my next stop the police. I'll see you, Mr. Ransom, and happy peacock hunting. I got in my car and drove back the way I'd come to Gordon Holzer's house on Vista Del Mar. The prowl car was gone, but Lieutenant Matthews' sedan was angled in against the curb, the red spotlight still on. I parked and went in. The lieutenant, his hands jammed down in his pocket, stood with two other plainclothes men near the shattered window, while a photographer worked over the corpse on the floor. Artie was nowhere in sight. Matthews spotted me as soon as I walked in and bore down on me with all the frivolity of a heavy cruiser.
Marlowe, I thought I asked you to stick around.
Yeah, you did. But I got an idea that wouldn't keep.
Eh? Did it prove anything?
Not for sure. Where's the girl?
Which one?
You mean there's more?
Oh, yeah. That red-headed fireball, Artie Dennis, you already know about.
Yeah.
The other one is a Southern belle named Patience Hancock.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, belonged to Lester.
Yeah.
Caught her snooping around outside trying to find out what had happened to him, and when we gave her the word, she blew her top.
Mm.
I got both of them locked up.
Good. Say, did you get any facts out of Patience?
Yeah, plenty.
Oh?
Oh, your bookie theory was right, Marlowe.
Thank you.
Yeah. All we got to do now is find Holzer, wrap this up.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's as simple as that, Lieutenant, listen, but it's the next step anyway. Come on, let's take a look out back, huh? When he left here, that's the way he ran.
I already looked. It's a blank.
Oh, really?
It's a door that leads out to the alley. Mm. Here, this way.
All right.
And you see? Nothing. Mm. Must have beat it through here and out to the street. You wouldn't happen to know where... Now, what's the matter, Marlowe? What are you staring at?
Hmm? Oh, that window there in the house right across the alley.
Yeah.
See the one with the lights on, the shade drawn?
Oh, yeah. Some old geezer sitting in there. So what about it?
The silhouette of his head on the shade, Matthews.
Yeah?
I won't forget that profile as long as I live. Corduroy hair and a light bulb nose. That is Isaac B. in that room, or... Holy smoke, wait a minute.
Hey, what are you doing? Put the gun away! What's the idea? You're crazy? You shot down on the ground.
Yeah, and the old guy in there didn't bat an eye. Didn't even turn his head at the sound. That gives me a big idea, and we're going to check something fast. Come on! We ran back inside, and as I picked up the phone, Matthews found out for me that the house across the alley faced on Carmen Avenue. Then I dialed Isaac B.'s home number, and when I finally got a sleepy hello, I asked him a question. The answer he gave boosted the odds on my hunch into the sure thing class. When I hung up, Matthews unhappily agreed to play along, and with one of the plainclothes men went around to Carmen Avenue to cover the front of the house across the alley. Well, I went out to the back way again, .38 in hand, crossed the alley, climbed up on a brick wall, and moved toward the window. Was 18 inches open. I eased one edge of the blind aside and looked in. A life-size bronze bust of Isaac B., I've heard mentioned earlier, sat on a table in front of the window. And beyond that was Gordon Holzer, backed against the wall and staring in stiff fear at a pistol clenched in the hand of the biographer, Everett Ransom.
Don't shoot. I made a mistake. I admit it.
You certainly did, Mr. Holzer. A much greater one than you realize.
But I want to return this now. I've brought the peacock back to you. Don't you understand?
Yes. Yes, but I'm afraid you don't. I got careless a few weeks ago and left the shade up one night when I took the peacock out of hiding to admire it. And you watched the whole thing from your dark bedroom window, which is directly across the alley, didn't you?
Yes, I knew it must be valuable. When I got in a jam yesterday, I broke in here and stole it. But I'm sorry, and that's why I brought it back. And now...
But don't move. Don't move, Mr. Holzer. You see, two facts must never be revealed. One... that I stole the headless peacock from Isaac B. a year ago. And two, a little matter of murder.
You killed Lester?
Yes, I killed Lester. I waited for you to come home, and when that Lester showed up and went into your house, I mistook him for you. He was a very nosy little man. I had to kill him.
You shot through my window so I could get away from Marlowe, because you couldn't afford to let me talk to him. In fact, you can't let me talk to anybody, ever.
That's right, Mr. Holzer. Luckily, I found out you'd be coming here to my place to return the peacock. Because I was with Marlowe when he found your note to that girl. He knows a lot about this, Marlowe does. But by the time I'm through, neither he nor anyone else will be able to figure out what really happened.
I'll go away.
No, Mr. Holzer, it's too late. This way, I'll have to restore that gorgeous thing to Mr. B. But I'll be something of a hero for catching the thief and the murderer. I'm sorry, Mr. Holzer, But after all, you did bring this on yourself.
You're quite a moralist, aren't you, Ransom?
Marlowe! How did you...
Marlowe!
Get back, Holder! Get out of the way!
Drop it and wrench your hands!
Turn loose of the gun!
No use, Ransom! Come on!
Drop it! Nice going, Holder. He's out.
And I've got his gun, Marlowe. Yeah. Here it is. I'm going to stand real still. Talk real quietly from now on out. Good enough, Marlowe?
Not quite, but it'll help. From what I've seen of Artie Dennis, brother, you're going to be a lifer anyway, but not with the state. Hey, it's cold out here. Come on, give me a hand.
Thanks for getting me out of the pokey, Mr. Marlowe. You rat.
No, I figure it's safe to turn you loose now, Artie.
Gordon's going to have to stay in here a while, I guess.
That's right.
But that won't be so bad. At least he'll be where no horses or women can bother him, till I can get to him again.
Won't be for long. He's got a lot in his favor, you know.
I hope so. I still don't understand how it all worked out. I was in jail, remember? How did you peg Ransom?
Well, I saw the profile of Isaac B. on a window blind. Didn't move, even when I fired a shot. That convinced me that it was a bust of the old boy. So I called him up at his home, and he told me that Ransom had a house on Carmen Avenue, which put it right across the alley from Holzer's. From there, it all fit.
Well, why didn't Ransom kill Gordon when he fired those shots through the window?
Oh, that. He still hoped to recover the peacock for himself at that point. But he didn't know where Gordon had put it, so he couldn't afford to kill him right then.
Oh, lovely. You know, Marlowe, all in all, we're pretty lucky, Gordon and I.
Yeah. Try to keep it, will you, baby? Keep it that way on everything but the horses.
Oh, you can make book on that, mister. Good night, Phil.
Good night, baby. I watched her as she walked away. She looked up at the barred windows where a very willing guy was learning a lesson he needed badly. Tossed him an okay with the fingers of one hand. You know, it made me feel good because I was sure she meant it. It was the kind of a kid who could make it stick. Then I drove home, and all the way I thought about the crazy assortment of people that had become involved because of the ponies and the headless peacock. I was still thinking about it over a glass of milk in my kitchen when I glanced at the newspaper on the table, opened to the sports page. Oh, it was like magic. My eye was drawn to a box in the corner and down the morning line for tomorrow's races until it stopped at the name Lucky Peacock. Oh, it was perfect. A hunch. A hunch that couldn't miss. Lucky Peacock was a cinch to win by a head. Or maybe he'd lose by a head. Or maybe he'd... Yeah, well, it's no use, Marlowe. Tomorrow you go to the races.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character and crime's most deadly enemy, star Gerald Moore, and are produced and directed by Norman MacDonald. Script is by Mel Donnelly, Robert Mitchell, and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Joan Banks, Howard McNair, Eve McVeigh, Jack Moyles, and Peter Leeds. Lieutenant Detective Matthews was played by Larry Dobkin. The special music is written by Richard Orant and conducted by Ivan Dittmars. Be sure and be with us again when Philip Marlowe says...
This time I took a beating and gave one. The man who lived in the dock was afraid. Someone I never got to meet was murdered and a knife-wielding crab was destroyed. All because a girl who hated the water took a boat ride in old Mexico.
One step to curing a disease is recognizing it and treating it. Hate is a disease, recognized by those who refuse to spread the doctrine of hate by speaking against a fellow American because of his color, race, or religious creed. The treatment to cure the disease of hate is to accept or reject people on their individual worth and to speak up wherever you are against prejudice and for understanding, to do your part to build a truly united America.
This is Roy Rowan speaking. Now, stay tuned for Gangbusters, which follows immediately over most of these same stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The American Broadcasting Company presents Pat Novak for Hire.
Sure, I'm Pat Novak for Hire. I got a couple of boats down on Pier 19 on the San Francisco waterfront. Sometimes I rent them out, but I found out it's easier to keep my budget healthy by risking my health in other ways. So I work around doing odd jobs. You can take that any way you like. But the best you can say for it is that it beats begging. At least you don't always limp. If your luck's in, you can keep a half lap ahead of the bill collectors if you don't let it go to your head. I did once. I helped a guy who owned 7 hotels convince a blonde in San Rafael that her memory wasn't that good after all. The payoff was too rich for my blood. I got the idea that with that kind of money, I could take over the gambling joints up around Lake Tahoe. It took him 3 days to show me I was wrong. I'd worked my way down from the gold-plated joints to a place called the Broken T, where they still recognized a dollar as currency. I was beginning to figure how long it'd take me to walk back to the bay when the help came along. He was a little guy with a pair of eyes I wouldn't trust with anything I wanted again. The kind of quiet, dark clothes that'd make it easy to get lost in an alley. He knew me.
Well, Novak, not doing so hot, are you?
I eat.
You want to make a quick buck?
There must be a reason. Tell me that first.
I'm hot. I shook the wheels down for a flock of dough.
You call that trouble?
Not yet. But I'd like to look ahead. How do I know these guys like it that I got all their money?
If it hurts you, give it back. They'll take it.
I got a better idea. I want to take it down to San Francisco.
Look, Crocker owns the Southern Pacific. If you got an urge to travel, talk to him. If you got a proposition, spread it out.
I'm driving down. It's a lonely road. I want you to go along as a bodyguard.
If these guys are out to hijack your role, 2 of us won't stop them any more than 1. They come in bunches when they want to.
Do you want the job, or are you going to talk me out of it?
I'll ride down with you. For $200.
You charge a lot for a ride.
You said it's risky, remember?
Okay, here's 50. You get the rest in San Francisco. I see you outside for 5 minutes. My name's Brown. I'll be waiting in my car.
Brown, huh?
Yeah, Brown. John Brown. Want to make something of it?
How can you? He was a quiet guy. We drove along for a couple of hours, and you could have repeated all he said on one deep breath. I kept watching the cars along the road, waiting for the muscle boys to show up, but nothing happened. Pretty soon I got the feeling that they weren't after him at all. I guess he'd seen too many movies. I finished off a pack of cigarettes as we got down out of the mountains and got him to stop at a roadside joint for reloads. He wouldn't leave the car, so I was all alone when the girl came up to me at the bar.
You going down to San Francisco?
Something like that.
You got room for me.
How far are you going?
That depends on who I'm with.
You might be handy at that. Car's without a heater. I don't have the owners.
So you'll keep one hand on the wheel.
So you better ask the guy who does. He's sitting out in the car.
Why don't he come in?
Don't build him up so fast. I got a car, too.
Where'd you get it? Steal it?
You selling medical insurance, maybe?
Why?
You're gonna need it if you keep elbowing into my face.
Speaking of elbows, what do you mean trying to muscle into my dame?
You two together?
Yeah. Why?
That's what I've been wondering. Why? So long, sucker.
What do you make of that?
I'd say you're out. You don't have to slide.
You're to blame for this.
Yeah. And tomorrow I'm going to make it rain.
I can start a storm right now.
Go right ahead. You've got the wind.
Well, you...
You cooled him nice, stranger. What started that?
Bad habits.
Yeah?
Uh-huh. Too many cigarettes. I guess I didn't have to hit the guy, but I was all geed up over the ride. I had to take it out on somebody. Outside, the air was cold and clear. A river made soothing noises in the darkness. I figured it'd be an easy night from then on in, but Brown was having the fidgets.
Come on, Novak. Let's get going.
Where's the dame?
What dame?
One came out here, a hitchhiker. Wanted to ride to town.
I didn't see any dame. Come on, let's go.
Yeah, that's queer.
What's queer? Let's go, let's go. Well,
suddenly you're nervous. What's the matter?
When I need a doctor, Novak, I know where to find one.
Yeah? But can you find one who shakes synchronized with yours? Otherwise, he's going to have a tough time with your pulse. From there on into town, John Brown didn't say a word. When we came across the Bay Bridge, he stopped in the terminal and made a phone call. Then we drove up to his place, a big corner apartment house up near the Civic Center. He told me to wait in the car while he went in to put away the money. I sat and smoked cigarettes and watched the dawn begin to light up the long, empty streets. I must have been there a half an hour before anything happened. And then it all began to happen at once, starting with Hellman. A homicide detective with a grudge against the world that he takes out on me. I hope I didn't keep you waiting, Novak. What got you out of bed, Hellman? Can't be insomnia. That takes conscience.
You'd be the sort to know about that. Mind if I look the car over?
Why not? I didn't steal this one. I prefer a roadster.
John Brown, huh? Now, there's a name. Where have I heard that before?
That's a foreign name. Polish, I think.
That's not where I heard it. It was broadcast in connection with a stolen car.
Try again. The keys, see?
So maybe he was careless and left his keys in his car.
Yeah, maybe I'm whimsical and changed my name to Brown. Go on, Hellman. You can't pin anything on me.
No? Give me the keys.
What for?
I'm looking in the trunk. We got a tip.
Not on this crate. I just got in from Tahoe. Nobody knows we're here.
Sure, sure. And if you aren't here, I guess there's nothing in the trunk either.
I'll bite. What'd you find?
A body. A girl's body. I'm not intruding, am I?
Not on me. You better get Brown. He's in the apartment there.
Sure. But won't you be lonely?
Look, Brown hired me to ride down from Tahoe with him. He cleaned up at the tables and wanted protection for his role. It's his car and his girl. Let's get him.
All right, come on. Oh, Brown listed. Nervous? Upset? Maybe you need a rest.
Framed.
Sure, somebody else did it. Shame on them. Come on, Novak.
The girl was a pickup, a hitchhiker. Why should he kill her?
I got a better question for you. Where can I get a lawyer?
I saw a purse with the body. Let's look it over.
Don't tell me you didn't rob her, too.
The purse didn't turn up much. Some keys, a little mad money, makeup stuff. A letter to Alice Stone with an address out in the Potrero district. The letter was no good, just a guy trying to patch up a split. By the hunch that Brown must have known Alice. That was the only way the killing made sense. I needed to get some dope on Brown. I needed to know about Alice. Hellman took Brown's address off the registration card, and I couldn't see where that had helped me any. No one had seen us together all the way down from Tahoe. Even if Brown were picked up, he could swear he'd never seen me before. With the car listed as stolen, he was a cinch to prove it. Yeah, I needed help bad. So I started looking for my old friend Jocko Madigan, an ex-doctor turned boozer who had more connections around town than the water department. I ran him down in a trap on Ellis Street trying to hold back the recession in liquor sales.
Hello, Patsy, my boy. Join me. This is the first one today.
Look, I'm in trouble, Jocko.
You're in trouble. Think how I feel.
Yeah, what's the matter? Sick?
No, just worried. I was reading in the paper here that the good ship Clyde Harris went down off the New England coast last night with 10,000 cases of scotch on board.
Yeah, there's some left. Listen, Jocko, I'm in a jam.
When did that become news?
I was up at Tahoe, and a guy hired me to drive him down here.
He didn't know you.
It turns out the car is stolen. There's a body in it. And the guy's disappeared.
Well, I don't blame him.
The body belonged to a girl named Alice Stone at this address.
10,000 cases of scotch. Can you imagine that?
Oh. And the way I figure it, the girl must have known the killer. I'm not very sure that John Brown, who claims his car was stolen, is innocent either. It's mighty strange that he left the car keys lying around.
What'd you want me to do?
Get on the grapevine. Find out if this John Brown is tied up in the rackets. The same for Alice Stone. Find out if they ran around with each other. Whatever you can about them.
All right, Patsy, but you'll have to wait. I've got to catch up on my drinking first.
Can't you lay off this stuff for a little while?
Are you telling me how to live my life again? You who consort with murderers, car thieves, and women of dubious ways? Push the bottle over here.
Look, Jocko, see if you can put the finger on a neat little guy with a pair of con man's eyes. Black hair, toy mustache, and dresses like Dapper Dan. About 150 pounds.
I imagine you trying to tell me how to live. You, who've got more bad habits than a dope fiend's convention.
The guy goes for dark, expensive clothes. He doesn't talk much unless he has to.
When I drink, I get the hangover. All you have to do is breathe regularly and trouble's all over town. If you had any social conscience, you'd go somewhere and hang yourself. I can't understand how I tolerate having you around.
Will you get a line on the guy for me?
From the way you described him, it ought to be a lay-down cinch. There's only about 10,000 men in town who'd fit that description. Will 100 or so of them be enough?
I want one. It's a long gamble. But try, will you, Jocko?
Imagine that, with the ocean full of ships hauling guano, bones, cattle, oil, lumber, pineapples, sugar, old newspapers, and gunny sacks. The one boat that has to sink.
Will you get on it?
Oh, there's no hurry. It's only you at stake. So long, lover.
I grabbed some breakfast, picked up a cab, and went out to the address of Alice Stone. It matched a wooden house that looked 2 years older in Utah that was trying to lie about it with a new plaster front and a fresh set of doorknobs. It looked like it had been built by an amateur who read the blueprints upside down. A dame answered the door. She was about tie-pin high to a six-footer, and she had red hair. The heavy, wavy kind that made you think she must be healthy. That wasn't hard to do anyway. The way she filled out her morning coat didn't leave much to worry about, except the seams. She could talk, too.
Neighborhood's improving.
You know Alice Stone?
Sure, she lives here. I might have known she'd see you first.
Who are you?
My name's Skip Harper, and Alice isn't home. What can you do with that?
How do you know I want to? Maybe I'm a salesman.
Look, mister, you aren't fooling anybody. You look about as much like a salesman as I do a decoy duck. Now, what do you want with Alice? Or do you have to be particular?
I can't use her. She's dead.
A salesman. With 5 o'clock shadow, a ten... Did you say dead?
Yeah. They found her in a car downtown this morning.
You're a cop.
You're wrong. Why should it worry you?
What do you mean?
Do you know who did it?
I don't know anything. I just don't like jams. Tell me how it happened.
We were coming down from Tahoe. She was in a roadside hamburger trap. She asked me for a ride, and I sent her out to talk to a guy who owns the car. The next time I saw her, she was tucked away in the trunk.
Why'd a guy kill her, just like that?
That's what I'm after. Maybe he just didn't like James. There's probably a better reason.
You think maybe he knew her?
Yeah. That's where you can earn a gold star. Did you know anybody by the name of John Brown?
Describe him.
He was playing the wheel at the Broken Tee up near Tahoe. Smooth little guy, about 2 sizes over a jockey. Wax mustache, a pair of eyes you could use to freeze fish.
So, that one. All right, I know him.
Give me an introduction.
His name's Brown, all right. I didn't know his first name before. He's a small-time hustler around town. Used to take Alice out now and then when he felt like tearing up a nightclub. Cops arrest him yet?
Hellman, the homicide dick, is knocking on his door about now. I don't expect him to be home.
No, he won't be. He has hideouts.
Name some of them.
I'm afraid to.
He can't hurt you. He's too busy playing cops and robbers.
You don't know Brown.
I gotta get to know him. Give.
I don't want to get mixed up in anything.
Neither do I, but I am. I need Brown.
Why don't you forget Brown?
I'd be bad manners.
What's wrong with bad manners? I know some that are fun.
Yeah, you would.
More fun than Brown will ever show you.
You'll keep. He won't.
Come here. Will this keep? Do you think?
You have a nice way of changing the subject. But still, where's Brown's hideout?
I won't tell you. He'll kill me.
Yeah, that's a gamble. I'm on the spot, and that's a fact. Talk to me.
I hate men.
Never mind your hobby. Give me Brown.
I hate you, you big, ugly, muscle-bound.
Brown.
You're hurting me.
Make me stop. Tell me where Brown is.
All right. There's a hideout, a little shack out near the beach.
Narrow it down.
Let go, I'm telling you. Well, I hope it's the last thing you hear.
From Skip's place out to the beach wasn't much of a drive. I went up and over Twin Peaks, watching the city and the bay spread out beneath the road like a giant map. The sun was working for the Chamber of Commerce that day, and the whole region was... Every backyard was full of clothes blowing in the wind. As the highway neared the beach, it began to turn up bunches of kids on their way to cash in on the weather. John Brown's hideaway was one of those old pioneer shacks built out near the ocean in the old days by guys who wanted to get away from it all. It was painted a weather-beaten brown, tilted a little on one side, and it looked like something that had been washed ashore in a bad storm a long while ago. I knocked on the door, but all that brought me was echoes, so I made a door out of one of the side windows. The inside of the place looked like something out of a hobo jungle. None of the furniture matched. The best piece in sight would have made a junk man sneer. There was a broken-down setup for poker and a tired double bed, and after that you were practically on your own. The kitchen didn't turn up anything but a flock of ants and some empty bottles. I began to get the feeling Brown must have had two hideouts or else he'd left town. It shows you how wrong you can be.
All right, hustler. Reach.
You walk soft.
Practice makes perfect. Turn around slowly.
Mm-hmm.
How come you're working without a gun?
Who are you?
This is my place, so you tell me.
My name's Novak. I'm looking for a guy named Brown.
Well, you're all right so far. I'm Brown. Who tipped you off I'd be here?
I don't remember.
Oh, you don't remember. So let me guess. It was that punk Venanti.
Never heard of him.
Never mind the rube routine. You got a hustler written all over you. What did Venanti send you here for? Does he think I know too much?
If I was sent to rub you, do you think I'd come without a gun, start using your head?
I like the way it's working. Tell me more.
I can't tell you anything. You don't fit my blueprints.
Don't get smart with me, hustler. Venanti sent you. Tell me what for.
If you're Brown, you don't need any new worries. You got an armful already.
I'm feeling no pain.
The cops have your car down at the station.
What for?
They don't like them with dead bodies inside.
Steady now. Let's have that again.
A dame named Alice Stone was found stuffed in your trunk. You're hotter than four stoves. Laugh yourself out of that.
If you know so much, why aren't you yelling copper?
Don't worry. They're on their way. I'm trying to get the key to the killing.
If this turns out to be a frame...
Look, I saw the guy who did it. And I'm the only one who did. That's better than your gun, so treat me nice.
If you saw the murder, you can help me out.
Sure. What do I get for it? A merit badge?
Yeah, things are coming too fast. I gotta do some checking.
You better spill what you know or else I'm liable to forget mine.
You got a nice lever there, hustler. If you can back up your talk. If the dame's dead.
Look who's bargaining.
Before I tell you anything, I need to check around.
Just wait a while. The cops will tell you everything.
I like to find out things for myself.
You will. I got a good grapevine in the county jail.
Now, do it the hard way.
You forget I have the lever on you now.
Yeah. Remind me to get scared about that. Try some aspirins for that, Andy.
I woke up twice before I decided to make it stay that way. The house was so quiet I could hear someone playing the piano several houses away. It was a nice, clean sound, neat, and full of try. No wise guys in it figuring fancy double crosses. No dead bodies. No policemen who argued with their knuckles instead of their heads. Probably some girl who thought a blackjack was a card game. I lay there listening to the music for a while, and I got up and brushed out my clothes. Now, there were three places I could find Brown. He wouldn't dare go to his home. He wouldn't return to the hideout. That left Skip's place. On the way over, I stopped at a drugstore and phoned Jocko to find out if he'd turned up anything. If you left out the hiccups, it went like this.
Hello, you reprobate renegade from all that's good and holy.
Skip the overture. Did you check on those people I asked you about?
Sure, I found out about them. Old Dr. Madigan and his crystal ball. He knows all and he knows all and like that there.
Tighten it up and tell me some.
That girl Alice Stone, you remember?
How can I forget?
She lived with a dame in the Potrero named Skip Harper. Nice people. The landlord served eviction notices every day except legal holidays.
Yeah, so they liked a good time. Then what?
Then she owns a half interest in a gambling joint around Lake Tahoe. It's not much of a place. They say the roulette wheels have so many magnets hung around them, the nails began to come out of the walls. Her partner runs the joint, and she shills the suckers in from down here.
How'd you make it the wheels crooked?
I have my informants. I have a network of good drinking folk who get around and hear things all the time. You'd be surprised how careless a guy can get with talk when he's got his elbow in a barroom ashtray. Now, as I was saying...
If the wheels are fixed, how come Brown was able to shake the joint down for $50,000?
I don't know how he did it. Maybe he was wired, too. All I know is that they've got better control of the ball than Bob Feller ever had on his best day. It's easy to believe if you know Skip's partner.
Yeah? Introduce me.
Name's Vinanti.
What's that again?
The partner's name's Vinanti. He's wanted in 8 states and Cuba.
Vinanti. I'll remember the name. What'd you get on Brown?
John Brown? Oh, swell guy. Helped free the slaves. A friend of man. A tribute to the
I've
nation.
I've heard that song. Now let's talk about the local Brown.
A small-time hustler. Petty larceny stuff.
You didn't get any tie-ins with Vinanti?
Oh, yeah. He was up at the gambling joint near Tahoe last night. Cleaned the place out. $50,000. That'd buy a lot of schnapps.
Yeah, it's beginning to fit together.
No doubt your mighty intellect has found the key.
I can count up to 10 if I don't wear mittens.
Sometimes 13, I'll bet. Well, who did what to whom?
Brown's got a partner working for him.
You don't say.
I'm going over and shake it out of Brown. He must know where the guy's hiding.
Well, don't go looking into too many auto trunks. Those things bite. So long, lover.
What Jocko told me began to give me some hope. The thing the picture needed was one more man, and a partner for Brown would round it out nicely. Yeah, Brown must have figured someone to try to hijack his role and hired a friend to bring it down to San Francisco. That didn't explain the killing. That didn't explain a lot of things. But it was a lead to the guy who could explain it. I needed Brown. As I gunned the car over the hills towards Skip Harper's place, I began to feel better. I was thinking how Hellman would look when I dumped the killer in his lap. There was a crowd along the street in front of Skip's place. Just as I drew up, Hellman came out on the porch. As I got out of the car, one of the neighbors pointed to me.
Novak, huh? They gave me a description, but I didn't think it was you. The guy they described sounded human.
Your jokes stink, Hellman. Try imitating birds or juggling.
The bird imitations are for you, Novak. You'll be singing to the DA any minute now. Come on in the house.
It's Brown. Where's the dame?
What did you do? Kill her, too?
Come off it, Hellman. You can't pin this on me.
I don't have to. The neighbors did it for me.
Why should I kill my alibi?
Because he wasn't. What did you do with the dame, Novak?
Why don't you try thinking for a change?
I do my poor best. For instance, I think you killed the dame in the car and then tried to saw it off in Brown. Then you caught Brown here this morning and killed him.
What for? Or don't you care?
For $50,000, Brown won at the Broken Tee up at Lake Tahoe.
The neighbors saw me come here. I must have seen Brown come here, too, after I'd left.
Nobody saw Brown come. Why didn't you buy a witness, Novak? You can afford it.
The dame's gone?
We haven't looked under the rugs.
How'd you get the dope on Brown winning all that dough?
We phoned Tahoe, bright boy. You've heard about the telephone?
Vaguely. Who'd you talk to?
The police. And then a guy named Vinanti. He says he remembers you following Brown out. And that the dame was with you, too.
It's a lie.
Sure, sure. But the 50,000 bucks is still missing.
Brown wasn't with me. He was a little guy.
It's the climate. He grew since you two dropped him here this morning.
I need some pictures.
Well... you drop Brown. The dame's going to drive you home. You proposition her on the way to help knock off Brown. She turns you down.
Not those kind of pictures. Are there any photographs around the house?
Yeah, there's some in the bedroom. Why?
Come on, let's look. The way she looked, she'd like cameras.
Here's one on the beach. What's she wearing?
That's a bathing suit. Here's the one. Tahoe.
Well, look at this nightclub gown. How do they hold those things up?
Thumbtacks. Hmm. So that's Vinanti. Look at the two of them posing in front of their sucker trap.
So what?
He's the guy who did it.
Sure, over the phone.
Did you phone him or he phone you?
He phone.
You want him?
What for? I got you.
He's here in the city, hiding out at Brown's place at the beach. Here's the address.
What kind of a windy is this, Novak?
Pick him up, will you? He said he was at Tahoe, and he is in the city. It smashes his alibi.
All right, but if you're trying any fancy work...
Are you going after him, or do we waltz some more?
How to hold you?
I'll be around, you know that.
What are you going to do?
I got some cleaning up to do. There was only one place for Vinanti to be. I headed the car out Potrero and down Bayshore Highway to the airport. I was betting everything on a hunch. Sometimes that's the way you have to play it. Sometimes hunches pay off. The plane I got was built for hurry. Skip still had her overnight bag in her hand when I walked in on them at the Broken Tee. Benanti began to act nervous when he saw me. Yeah, but not Skip. I began to wonder if she'd ever known how it felt to be frightened. You'd never guess it from the way she talked.
Hello, Novak. Don't you ever shave?
I had a close one just now.
Doesn't show.
You don't know where to look.
What do you want, Novak?
I got it.
Don't be cryptic, baby. It doesn't become you.
No. You don't act nervous. Don't you care about jail?
Nobody's going to jail, Novak. Except you, maybe.
I'd be nervous if I had explained all those dead bodies back in Frisco.
We don't know anything about dead bodies. We've been up here for hours.
Yeah? I had a hunch that'd be your alibi.
That's no alibi, Novak. It's a fact.
It won't gel, Benanti. You're cooked.
Look, Novak. Brown deserved to die. He killed Alice, and before that, he fixed the wires on the wheel so he could break this place. He robbed us of $50,000. We had a right to get it back.
Is that what Benanti told you?
That's the way it happened, Novak. There's $10,000 in it for you, if you can remember it that way, too.
$10,000? Easy there, Vin.
Yeah, that was a little double talk, baby. He was trying to bribe me to dummy up on you.
Dummy up? I know what happened.
When you get through dreaming, try this for a bedtime story. Benanti hired Brown to pick up the winnings while he ran the table. Then, with Brown dead, Benanti was going to fly back here in his private plane for the same alibi he's using now. Only he'd own the broken teeth.
You're lying.
Shut up, Vin. Tell me more, Novak.
The plan began to sour up when Alice tried to thumb a ride. Alice knew him, so he killed her. He still needed to kill Brown, but he figured then he could hang the double killings on me and make it even better.
You're on the needle, Novak.
The only trouble was that Brown wasn't home. Vin had to chase him. When he finally found him, Brown was at your place. I don't know what happened there, except that Benanti must have killed Brown before he had a chance to talk.
How was that? I'd gone to the store.
So when you come back, Brown's dead, and Benanti tells you he did it to recover the money.
Yeah. So you were going to double-cross me, baby.
He's lying, I tell you.
See if you can prove it to a jury.
I should have known.
In case you get any fancy ideas about trying to lie out of it, I got a witness to feel the motor of your plane. It's still hot.
A $10,000 offer still stands.
Uh-uh. I need you to clear me.
Yeah. And I could use the sole ownership of this joint.
You wouldn't rat on me.
Oh, watch me, baby. I'll let you rot in jail.
Novak, I'll make it $25,000 if you help me quiet this dame.
You would, Vin? Start out by quieting this.
Lousy shots. They both lived. That is, Benanti lived until he got a bad case of asthma in the San Quentin gas chamber. Skip got off with a flock of scars and some good advice from the judge to stay away from questionable characters. But advice is free, and Skip was the kind who went after the dough, so I see her now and then. She's gone honest, I think. Sometimes we toss dice, and I've known her to lose.
Heard on tonight's program were Ben Morris as Novak, John Galbraith as Inspector Hellman, Jack Lewis as Jocko, and Mary Milford as Skip, with Henry Leff, Jerry Walters, Kurt Martell, and Lucille Bliss. Special music by Otto Clare. Listen next week at this same time when over most of these stations, the American Broadcasting Company presents Pat Novak for Hire. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
That's it for this episode of Case Closed. I'll be back next Wednesday with more. But if you want to find more old-time radio right now, visit RelicRadio.com. You'll find the other shows listed there. Past episodes from this one and links to everything else Relic Radio. If you'd like to help support the show, you can do so from the website as well. Click on that donate button. Thank you very much to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.